Welcome to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on 1400 AM, 99.3 FM WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBear 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at keweenawreport.com. In the second segment, I will be joined by members of the Blue Key Honor Society of Michigan Tech to talk about the upcoming Winter Carnival festivities. But in this segment, I would like to welcome KREC Treasurer Sam Lockwood to give us an update on the energy crisis. Thank you, Mr. Lockwood, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me again, Sam. I believe this is the third installment of KREC's involvement in the energy crisis.
There is a lot to talk, so it just feels like that we should get an update on what's going on. And I guess let's start off with the biomass work session that happened in Calumet earlier this month. I guess tell the people about what that meeting consisted of.
We had two main purposes for that. We wanted to, as an organization, bring the real experts together on biomass for the UP. And that's not really resident within KREC. The loggers that are out there all the way up to the big landowners like Plum Creek Timber Company, J.M. Longyear, and Malpas, they're really the experts, and they could answer two questions for us. If we are proposing to have an 11-megawatt baseload plant for Houghton and Keweenaw counties, can we get the fuel that we need?
Basically, is it plausible?
Is it plausible in terms of the fuel supply? Absolutely. So we posed that question, and we got those experts together, and we let them do the talking. And at the end of the day, using real numbers, we always like to talk data, we need 120,000 green tons of fuel to fire that plant for the year. And when we talk about green tons, we're going to try and do that in the most sustainable way. We would like to get forest residues. These are the things that are left on the forest floor after normal harvest activities in our area. I mean, harvest and logging is a huge industry.
It's a huge part, in the Upper Peninsula.
And has been for a long time. And the other participants in that are the mills, and so representatives of Northern Hardwoods were there. And we appreciated everybody come. And, Sam, as you remember that night, it was a pretty nasty weather night. So.
And speaking of Northern Hardwoods, there was the two the decision on a location for the biomass plant. The first one was in, I'm trying to remember because I know what the one that was decided on was Northern Hardwoods. We could just concentrate on that. The decision for selecting the location for Northern Hardwoods, what went into that being the one that you felt was capable of having the biomass plant?
We feel part of our purpose is to do some of that initial site vetting. So we did have two sites that we were proposing. But as you mentioned, hands down, siting the biomass electric plant close to a mill, close to the fuel. The mill will process roundwood that comes in from the forest, from the loggers.
Yep.
It gets scaled, and it's either cut into saw logs or veneer. They generate a significant amount of residue during that process. And so if you say that you need 120,000 green tons of fuel a year at the plant, the question we asked the mill was,
can you
supply some of your mill residue? And it was an incredible win-win. So, again, to put an exclamation point on what you said, putting it at Northern Hardwoods is an absolute win. So the second site had some advantages, but they didn't come close. So a mill who's using that current residue for fuel to heat the plant or for kiln drying, we can co-op those tons. And let's say, for example, it's half of what we need, 60,000 tons. We put it in the biomass plant. We make electricity. But for every unit of electricity we get 2 units of waste heat.
Of course.
And it's not really waste heat because we're going to pump it right back into the buildings, for example, on Northern Hardwood site, expand their kiln drying, or just supply what they currently have. So they don't lose anything. But we don't have to go in the forest and pay loggers $30 to $50 a ton to procure that stuff, even though that's part of what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an absolute win-win. If you can eliminate the uncertainty in the fuel, because each and every year the mills are generating that residue as a matter of doing business, that's a great way to pull this biomass plant off.
In terms of the experts that came, what was their reaction, I guess, after the presentation and everything? Was it, for the most part, positive, or were there any concerns that arose from their questions?
I think it was uniformly positive. Again, to mention those big commercial timber owners, Plum Creek, J.M. Longyear, who's a half owner of Northern Hardwoods, the mill, and Malpas. Everybody stayed on that nasty weather night. They stayed till 9 o'clock when our adjourn time was, and they stayed afterwards because there were two concerns that were brought up. And I'll credit the loggers with bringing these up.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lower number, we thought, that we could pay to have fuel brought to the plant. That was about $30 a ton. And the loggers, in their discussions in the small breakout groups, they brought to us immediately, our main concern there is that number may be too low.
And they would know.
They would know.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently delivering pulpwood or saw logs. They know what it takes. They know what fuel costs and all those things. They said that number is low. The beauty is that all the money for fuel, for biomass, stays in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
So as we'll talk later, I imagine, we're not going to export those funds to another state or another country. They'll stay right here. And if you need 120,000 green tons and you're paying folks locally to have jobs and to pull this fuel to the plant, well, $40 times $120,000 is $4.8 million a year that stays in the community. We know we have to have fuel for the plant. We got to pay somebody to do it, but why not stay here? So if that's $5 million a year that would stay in Houghton and Keweenaw counties, when we expand our plan to all 15 counties,
mm-hmm.
it's about a factor of 7 we're looking at. So we would provide income that stays local, 7 times 5, about $35 million every year for fuel for biomass. It's an absolute win for everybody.
And you said there was another concern, or was that within the...
The second concern related to the fact that the footprint for the plant, based on the biomass electric facility,
yeah.
Defines that 11-megawatt plant is going to be between 10 and 15 acres. So at a site like Northern Hardwoods, they have plenty of land. Well, once again, because of the uncertainties up here with our weather patterns, you have the spring break in logging when road restrictions keep the loggers off the roads.
Mm-hmm.
Inventory is critical. You don't want to get to a point when your plant that has to be reliable 24/7, providing that baseload power, runs out of fuel. So the loggers again brought up, make sure you've got a separate space there for inventory for fuel so that we can bring it whenever we can bring it, but you don't run out of room. And it was such a great thing. So let's say the footprint for an 11-megawatt plant down by Atlantic Mine is 15 acres. Make sure you got another 15 acres for inventory so that you never run out of fuel. And there's a case study that shows us that that's important. When they put the biomass facility on Northern Michigan's campus, they had no room for inventory. And they have a certain kind of fuel that they have to use down there. They have to get deliveries once every 36 hours or they don't have fuel for the thing. And so that it was something that they brought up spontaneously during the working session, but it was absolutely true given the case studies in our own area.
You're listening to Copper Country Today here with my guest, Sam Lockwood from KREC. So let's go the entire plan moving forward. I did speak to you at that meeting, and there was supposed to be some kind of communication between KREC and the utilities. Has that happened?
It has not happened yet. In between the biomass working session and today, what happened was the governor's office, putting a rhetorical question out to the UP in general saying, if you don't have a plan for the energy crisis, we are going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
They made an announcement by press release a few weeks back that was fairly surprising, I'll say, to most people in the coalition, not everybody. That has changed the playing field a little bit. So,
without going into too much detail, in what ways has it changed? We'll get into the announcement and some of the criticisms you have a little later, but in terms of what it changes for KREC's game plan.
The plan, we're putting together a plan that's going to be UP-wide that uses only assets that are
in the
UP that will provide energy independence for the area. We think that's pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
We started off this campaign completely transparent, going public with the information as quickly as we could. We've sent all the data and all of our plans to the governor's office and our senators starting on election day on November 4th.
Yep.
We haven't heard anything. And I just reviewed this morning, Cloverland Co-op, whose members in the eastern UP pay about 15 cents, so 40% less than we pay because they have a lot of hydro over there, they weren't invited to the table either. So what's currently happening is that a process, a direction, a solution is being offered from people who are remote from us, who are using language that suggests it's for our benefit and it is not. And they are, I would say derailing isn't too strong a word. They're derailing a process that we can have our own solution that's rolled out in a timely fashion. They're offering up things that they claim are beneficial to us and they are not. And so since we haven't had a voice down there, we took a week to take stock of our whole strategy, mm-hmm. and we said, full steam ahead. What we're doing is right. Every time we make a real breakthrough, we're going to make that public. And at the end of the day, to answer your question, where are we going from here? We have completed looking at all the biomass assets that we actually have in all 15 counties. That's done today, and I want to share those numbers with you. It'll mm-hmm. be the first time we've gone public. We have mapped all the existing hydroelectric in the area. Hydroelectric, all these plants that were built during the mining days, some of them can produce power for 1 cent per kilowatt hour. That's a big advantage that they have over at Cloverland Co-op. So for baseload power, biomass plus hydro gets the job done. And then wind and solar on top of that, which I'm sure we'll talk about that too.
So I guess go into some of those numbers and try to put them in a perspective to where people, you know, because sometimes when it comes to like kilowatt hours and stuff like that, it's hard for people to understand it. So put it in a way where just, you know, the average person could understand.
At the Energy Summit on November 10th last year, we said that for Houghton and Keweenaw counties, 38,000 people, given their usage, we could probably cover them with a baseload plant of 11 megawatts, which is biomass,
mm-hmm.
22 megawatts of solar, and a dozen wind turbines, which are 1.6 megawatts.
Yeah.
Each, that's about 20 megawatts there. We've confirmed all that. So for our straw man here, it takes 120,000 green tons a year to run one baseload plant. And we think that baseload plant can cover two counties.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we need six more 11-megawatt baseload plants. Here are the numbers. Every year, harvest activity. So we're not going to go out and harvest additional trees. We're not going to do anything that is additionally invasive or additionally harmful.
It's just what we have there.
When they go in and harvest right now, because it doesn't pay them to take the residues out of the forest, so that's tree tops, tree limbs, and anything non-merchantable, usually four inches or less, or
mm-hmm.
The species of trees that are not merchantable. 90% of those residues are left on the ground. Here's what we have. And we did a comparison. There was a report written for Presque Isle back in 2008. I took all that data, and I gathered all new data for 2013. The good news is that the UP's forest assets are extremely stable. Nothing moved more than about 1% in mm-hmm. terms of totals, except for harvest activity. We have 1.22 million green tons of year of just residues. So that's the low-hanging fruit. That's the stuff that we'll ask the loggers to bring into the plants. 1.2 million divided by 120,000 tons, that's enough forest residues for 10 of these plants.
Okay.
10 times 11, 110 megawatts. So we are probably right there. That number right there with just forest residues gets us all the biomass base load plants that we need. The good news is that the forest assets are spread pretty evenly around. Keweenaw County, with the lowest population, has about 200,000 acres. Mm-hmm. All the other counties have a 500,000 acres. And Marquette, with pretty much the biggest city and the most usage, has about 1 million acres. So the spread of the forest is about perfect.
As yeah, you it's right there.
Predict. And then I want to thank the U.S. Forest Service without naming anybody, but they gave us another a golden egg in the data that they gave yesterday. If you wanted to minimize the expense you have going into the forest and grabbing those residues,
mm-hmm.
transporting them to the mill, all the costs associated with that, if you could go to the mill, who, as a matter of processing, the round wood that comes in generates a certain number of tons of residue, bark and
yeah.
either sawdust or sawflour, they call it. Very stable, once again, comparing 2004 and 2010, the latest data. There's an additional 621,000 green tons of year of that material, which supports another 5 11-megawatt baseload plants. Well, we don't need 15 plants. We probably need more like 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
So what the mill residue allows you to do is take that fuel, which is currently being burned at the mill for heat, use that to fire the biomass electric plant, and for every unit of electricity, you get another 2 units of heat. Use that heat to heat the building or for kiln drying or expanding some sort of drying operation there. So the answer is, in black and white, we have all the fuel we need. If we pay people to bring that fuel that's necessary, the stuff in addition to what we already have at the mills, if we pay people to do that, we can keep anywhere between, I want to say, $17 million to $35 million a year in the UP.
In the community.
And not pay for nuclear power from Wisconsin, coal from somewhere else, natural gas from mm-hmm. somewhere else. And the data that's out there now shows that Michigan as a state is a complete energy import model to the tune of $23 billion a year.
You're listening to Copper Country Today here with my guest, Sam Lockwood from KREC. I guess you opened it a little bit, so let's get into the governor's decision. And I guess right off the top, tell me, you told me, I guess, before the interview that the message of the governor just it did not make sense.
For us up here who are actually experiencing the crisis, we're the ones with the highest electric rates
mm-hmm.
on the mainland at 25 cents. I think they completely missed the mark. So the governor's office, which is one accountant and two attorneys, and then representatives from UPCO, representatives from We Energies, I'm missing a major player there, but they announced a breakthrough.
Quote unquote breakthrough.
It doesn't relieve anybody from paying the highest rates, that 25 cents per kilowatt hour. There's no discussion of that. What there is discussion of is four different points that are very early, I would call them talking points. There are no signed agreements. There are no...
No, that is true. There wasn't like a real plan going forward. It was more of an assessment of the situation, which we are looking at it like we know how messed up and high the rates are.
If you were gonna from Lansing, if you were gonna orchestrate a solution for the UP, and it's a energy solution, I think you would have energy people at the table, scientists at the table who know how to convert to electricity from
mm-hmm.
biomass,
mm-hmm.
experts in wind and solar and hydroelectric, the big utilities. Cloverland Co-op, who arguably is doing the best job in the Upper Peninsula in providing their members with electricity at 15 cents. I mean, that's pretty close to the national average. They weren't even invited to the table. So they reinstituted on their website their call to action. They're still on the hook for the $2.2 million a month until the SSR payments are scheduled to stop if they get the agreement done by July. So I've got a call in to Dan Dashow over there so I can talk to him. The Keweenaw Renewable Energy Coalition, who's putting together a renewable plan for the whole UP, wasn't invited to the table. I think that's a major mistake. And
You did mention, though, about the governor's claim that this would be a Michigan solution, but that's just not right.
That is not right. And Sam, I'm going to
grab
my paperback
because
I want to give you hard data. Emily Lawler had an article come out yesterday in MLive, and it's dynamite. Here's Michigan, not energy independent, as you'll see shortly. Michigan's renewable portfolio standard is among the weakest in the nation. Michigan spends $22.6 billion a year importing its energy, 97% of its transportation fuels, primarily gasoline,
mm-hmm.
100% of its coal and nuclear fuels. So that Presque Isle plant, which part of the new governor's breakthrough announcement,
yeah. mm-hmm.
it's going to operate 5 more years and we pay somebody else for the coal. Nuclear, 100% outsourced. Natural gas, which is being touted as within 4 or 5 years building this big new 280-megawatt plant down in Marquette, basically for Cliffs, We import 82% of the natural gas that's currently burned in Michigan. Well, that to me looks like a completely dependent paradigm. What we're proposing for the UP is the exact opposite of that. All the biomass, all the funds for the biomass would stay in our local communities. It would expand the revenue streams for loggers. It would add in chippers and transporters and inventory specialists to make sure that they're always fueled.
Creating more jobs.
We have 164 megawatts of existing hydro just at the investor-owned utility level here. That alone for regulating power or peak power or baseload power is more than enough to drive the 300,000 residents' consumption. Wind and solar, by definition, are no fuel. And when you build the solar array or you put up the wind turbine, that's your last capital investment unless there's a breakdown on the turbine, which are breakdowns are 2% rather than the 12.5% to 15% a year that the coal plants are down. All those things are UP-based, assets that bring money into the local economy. Now, the caveat to that would be this. We're so strapped right now that for some of these things, we might ask third-party developers to come in who will do basically a no money down. They'll design, build, finance, operate, and maintain solar arrays under power purchase agreements with local consumers.
Mm-hmm.
I just met with some investors today. I'm trying to beat the bushes now to see if the Houghton and Keweenaw County have a biomass plant that costs $50 million. We have to design and build that. We also have to finance it and operate and maintain that.
Of course.
If we're suggesting 22 megawatts of solar at $3 a watt, that's $66 million before the tax credits. If we're talking about 20 megawatts of wind, which is the cheapest renewable right now, and we're looking at $25 or $30 million, somebody has to pay for those. And to get us out of the crunch, you might have to reach out to a downstate company. You might have to reach out to somebody outside of Michigan. Our solar track record in Michigan with 1 megawatt commercial on a carport down in Dearborn at Ford, that's not too impressive. But you might reach out to somebody in California who's put up gigawatts of solar. We can do it. We're going to come in with 25-cent rates. We're going to come in and protect ourselves from all this nonsense. If you implement this model, forget about what the governor's office is saying. Forget about solutions that don't benefit the local economy. We'll have our own thing. These will be fixed prices, not variable prices. One great question, Sam, to ask you rhetorically, basically, is natural gas is cheap right now. But when you look globally at where demand is going for liquefied natural gas in Russia and places like that, when that happens, supply and demand, the price of natural gas is going to go way up, and we will have spent all this money on infrastructure, and we'll be right back where we are now, where we have to pay exorbitant prices because the fuel price is so volatile. If you have wind and solar, you don't pay for fuel.
Of course not.
That's protection.
Yeah.
That's insurance. If you sign a 20-year power purchase agreement at 11 cents with somebody, unless they break the contract, you are gold. So at the end, to put the exclamation point down there, if our research, and we're going to publish this research within a week, shows that we have all the fuel we need between biomass and hydro, and if we build out with the third best wind and 5 months of the year better sunlight than Hawaii, why aren't we doing this? And if the UP has their own solution, why aren't they at the table if the governor's office thinks it's their responsibility to force feed us a solution?
So with all this information and with KREC's involvement, what if people from the community want to get involved, what would you expect from them? What can they do if they want to get involved in this whole initiative?
And I'm just thinking about this as you mentioned it, Sam. I think what Cloverland Co-op has done, they've got up on their hind legs and they're saying, we do a great job for our customers in the eastern UP. Look what they pay in the western UP, 25 cents. Our people pay 15 cents. Mm-hmm. That's the highest rate category, 40% less. They put on their website before the governor's announcement and now after the governor's announcement, because they're still on the hook for $2.2 million a month on those SSR payments, they have on their website, which is called a call to action. They describe what we're up against, and then on the left-hand side of that single page on the website our contact information from everybody from Governor Snyder down to the local 110th district representatives or whoever's over there.
Whoever represents them.
I think that's what we're going to do immediately on KREC's website, which is krecnews.com. We'll put up that call to action. We want to hear from community members. Tell us what you think about plans from outside the area. Tell us what you think about our plan, which is evolving, and you can see all the press we've gotten. Everything we've put out is on the website. Tell us what you think about that, and we will have those contact links. It's typically or traditionally email, but you'll be able to go with language, suggested language is what Cloverland did. You can go right to the governor. You can go right to Valerie Brader. You can go right to Attorney General Bill Schuette. Tell them what you think. Just use our website as a portal to do that.
All righty. Well, that'll wrap up this segment of Copper Country Today. I'd like to thank my guest, Sam Lockwood, for joining me on today's program.
Thanks a lot, Sam. Appreciate it.
Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at keweenawreport.com. Stay tuned for the second segment of Copper Country Today.